Blog Talk Radio.
There's nothing wrong with your radio or your podcasting. We control the volume. We control the game. Bitch. Stand by because we're talking America's language. Truth, faith, common sense, and a little bit of laughter because the left is so damn laughable. Scott Kesterson here with James Bostic on the American Brand Radio Initiative. Hey, Scott, what's going on, bud?
How are you, James? Nice to have you being here this evening with you. It's almost like an episode of The Twilight Zone, right?
Or The Outer Limits.
Oh, that's even better. I got it. Yeah, I have to admit I slipped on that one. That's good. Yeah, I can go there. I think we're living in The Outer Limits, especially when you look at the left.
We are pushing the edge of the envelope, man. That's for sure. You know, we didn't get a chance. You know, the split screen thing didn't come off as planned yesterday, but I think Lisa has come up with a solution, and she's going to drag me kicking and screaming through the 20th into the 21st century with an iPhone. So I think the next time we try this, I'll have the capabilities in order to make this. Make us smooth and up to date, man. Make us modern and hip.
Well, I hope so. That'd be good. I mean, I hate the fact that I really do hate the fact that they always make stuff platform dependent. But I think it's important to start expanding what we're doing, you know. And unfortunately, you know, we have to deal with these technologies. You hear me rant on this all the time, and. Yeah, you know, like this morning they did an update on the YouTube app, and I don't even know if I've solved that problem yet. And so suddenly I could not get any of my live comments streaming. I don't know what happened, you know. And it's
oh,
like,
geez.
Okay, you know, and it's just I swear to God, these engineers have Tourette's. They sit there in their desk, you know, and they have nothing to do. And they sit and they mill around and they fidget and they're eating their Cheeto puffs and they're getting nice and fat on their Dunkin' Donuts that are sitting over every morning someone's bringing in, and then like, oh, we need to do this, and you know it's like, did somebody ask you to do that? No, but it just needs to happen because that's what the world needs. Like, all right, thank you very much for screwing it up again. You know, and it's just like, leave well enough alone, man. We have been this last, I don't know if you paid attention, but this last 6 weeks, it's just like a train wreck of updates that are happening on the various platforms. And it's just every time you turn around, it's like iOS update, iOS update 10.6, iOS update 10.6.6.2. And it's like, stop already, you know? And so, it's part of the big scam of this whole thing. And the big scam is that it's really interesting to me when we roll back and think back to when you and I were kids. Okay, I think this is the easiest way to do it because we're pretty close in age. And when you had your Social Security number, like my Social Security card was locked up in a lockbox in the house, right? And it was, you did not lose that. It was very important. You memorized the number. But that Social Security card was the thing. I mean, you were careful with that. And now it's just like we've accepted the fact. It's like, oh, you know what? I might get my Social Security number compromised. My credit card gets ripped off about every other week. It's all right. You know, we just kind of accept this insanity. And it's all tech. Every damn bit of it is tech. And even worse of it is if you look behind the scenes on it, what you start to find out is it's organized crime maximizing the vulnerabilities to make millions and millions of dollars illegally. And it's just like it's an accepted way of life now. How do you want to get rich? I want to sell fake IDs. How do you want to get rich? I want to steal people's data. I mean, it's just constantly going on. And in the tech, they tell you, like, we're doing an update. But at the end of the day, we're all sitting here vulnerable. And we've just come to accept, like, the mediocrity of tech is that you are not secure. Even though they tell you you are. Worse yet, you're exposing yourself every time you get on this. Hey, think about this. Think about if you were someone said to you, James, we want you to go down shopping, and this is what the new world order looks like. We want you to go to Walmart, and we want you to take off all your clothes and walk around Walmart naked. And you're like, why would I do that?
Well, how the hell am I going to stand out from everybody else if I do that?
Exactly. I mean, it's just like. And then you hear
so you just want me to blend in other words.
Yeah, trust us. Like, trust what? No, I'm stunned by the, you know, I mean, you hear me talk about this. You and I talk about this. I mean, it's just constantly going on about these. And I get off on tech, I mean, not in a good way. I go off on tech. And this thing that, you know, it's like, the example is, and I point my finger at people too, and I don't do this to denigrate people, but to call it out for how we become complacent, right? So we go to this place where it's like, I hate Facebook. Man, do I hate Facebook? And it's like, I got it. You hate Facebook, okay? But why are you still using it? You know, I got all my photos on it, and that's how I connect with friends and family, and that's how we used to communicate. And then so you say, okay, well, you do, and then they'll send things like, they'll send it on a private chat. This is the one I love. They'll send stuff that really shouldn't be sent on private chat, whether it's some sort of information on an activity that Antifa's doing or some sort of private message. You know, it's like, why are you sending this on chat? Well, it's private between you and I. It's like, yeah, but it's Facebook. Okay, it didn't say encrypted private chat. It said private chat. It means they're in the back of their servers. They're just ripping you wide open. Everything you reveal there, they're using this data to sell more advertising. And you just become accepting of this insanity. Woo! I don't know what to say. What do you think, Captain America?
Well, you know what? Basically, here's – it's funny that you would say that. Because here's my take on technology. And again, and for the purposes of disclosure, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, you're listening to a guy who still carries a flip phone. So having said that, you know what? It's I see it on a regular basis, and I see it very clearly amongst my coworkers, this dependence that you're talking about on technology. And all these cats, you know, they've got the latest and greatest when it comes to iPhones or S phones or, you know, whatever it is. And every time I turn around to look, to say something to someone or, you know, make a comment or see if they notice the same thing that I see, I can't do it because they're not noticing anything other than that dull glow of the smartphone screen that's in their hand. And that's the one thing I've got to say, and you know, even the kids. I was sitting in the gym class one day with some of my guys, and I got a text from, it might have been even from you. I got a text, and I went to open my phone to see what it was, and these little high school girls behind me, "Oh, my God, Mr. Bossy, you still carry a cell phone?" And they were hooting. They were cackling. But there's this dependence on this kind of stuff, and you're absolutely right. And this is how far it's gone. Just about 20 minutes ago before I got on, logged on to Blog Talk, our flagship studio here with the Patriot Nation Radio Network, I saw an article on Drudge where in Salzburg, Germany, and I'm not making this up, and I know you guys think I make stuff up like this because I lie all the time anyway, but I'm not making this up. They are padding utility poles and street lamp poles in Salzburg, Germany. Now, I'm not even going to ask. Tell me why, Scott. Why are they doing that? You know why.
Are we talking about the ones on the ground so that people don't walk into traffic?
You're damn right. Or so they don't walk into a telephone pole. They're padding the utility poles and the light posts so these idiots that are looking at their iPhones, you know, when they do walk into them, and apparently enough of them are doing it to where the city of Salzburg, Germany has decided, you know what? These guys, we're going to have to start padding the poles, man. We're going to have to start padding the poles because these fools are walking into it. So, yeah, I know where you're going. Yeah, and these people are slaves to it, Scott. They are slaves to this crap.
Well,
not me, dude. I'm living in a computer augmented 2004, and I'm perfectly happy.
Well, James, I'll be honest with you. If it wasn't for these shows, which I value more than I value the having to deal with the ridiculousness of the technology, I'd go back to it. I seriously
agreed.
To be honest with you, I'd probably throw the damn thing in the garbage.
Just, we are. We're living in this time. Seriously, man, they're padding the poles.
Well, I know they are. And the problem we have here with the way we're living in this day and age is it's becoming accepted to be abnormal. And people that hear this hopefully won't get offended, but it's becoming normal to be stupid. And that bothers me. Because So you have to remember back to it was Back to the Future, okay? The Back to the Future, there's this great scene when they go back in the second movie, they go back to the Wild Wild West, right?
Right.
And he's sitting there in the saloon, and he makes a comment about the future where people go running, right? And one of the old cowboys looks at him and he starts laughing. He said, "People run for fun? What type of crazy world is that?" It's a great moment, you know. It really is, and it really gives a good glimpse at how, you know, how what we do now. And I'm not knocking athletics, obviously, because I built the redneck tractor tire CrossFit gym. But all that said, I mean, come on, let's get real. I mean, we do stuff and we accept it as normal, but if we were active in our lifestyle, if we were really working hard in a manual labor, it's the capacity, right? And doing our thing as we used to do with hard labor, or bucking hay or shoveling grain or building buildings, you know, I think at the end of the day, our value structure would be a little bit different. I don't even know if that's true, though. So I'm going to back off on that a little bit. I think it's just a dedication to commitment of work. And I think when we get to that, we start to look at how much it takes to do things realistically, not just plug-and-play work, like going to a cubicle and punching out. And I say that not in defense of what you and I are doing, but there is something that I do need to say. When you make choices of commitment and passion, and when you're doing that and you're putting the commitment of passion of what you're doing ahead of everything else, It's not for love of money. You know, it's not for love of glory. It's commitment, passion to what you believe in. And I don't care whether that's the welder that's welding the pipes up in Wyoming for the gas pipelines, or if you've got somebody's, you know, ranching up in Oklahoma, or if you've got a plumber that just loves his job. I've met all these people. I've worked with these folks, and I've always admiration for the trades that love their jobs. And even people that go to a corporate job, I'm not taking it away from them, but that really love and commit to doing something big, right, every day.
Right.
When you're committed that way, not to try to socially engineer the world, not trying to change the world, but literally making an effect every day, commitment to your craft. You know, and I'll say this because I worked in the trades most of my life. And then when I got into doing photography and film in Afghanistan, and then I did my stint working with special operations. And I mean, those were some very, very demanding years. And now it's interesting because I would say that the rigor of getting the American brand up and going as a building of an organization, it's as hard as I've ever worked. And physically, it's not carrying the loads of the lumber I used to carry when I timber framed or when I did things like that. But it's carrying the intellectual loads and the commitment to something that's equal to all of that. And I say that because that's values, right? And it happens that we're using tech because we need to, because that's the vehicle. But you and I could just as well throw tech down and go stand out here on a pulpit or a platform somewhere and stomp this thing across the country on the back of a train like Teddy Roosevelt did when he did his campaign, right? I'd be just as comfortable doing that.
Oh, that would be awesome, man. Having our own train.
You want to do that?
Like the Wild Wild West, man. That would be, yeah, you know, those cats had their own train. That would be terrific. And here's the thing that gets me about all of this. And to me, it seems to be a two-edged sword. The knife cuts both ways, so you have to be really, really careful. What we're doing is we're using this medium, the podcasting and the internet outreach, that technology, those particular mediums, as tools. And a lot of people, the people I'm working with every day, do not need Facebook on their smartphone. I'm going to tell you that right now. They don't need Facebook on their smartphone because that's where they're at. Do you see what I mean? Like I said, every time, you know, I turn around to look at somebody to tell them something or make an observation about something I've just seen, and I shut up because they haven't seen it because they're LOLing and OMGing with their BFFs, and you know I'm you know it's a tool. What do you use a shovel for? Well, you use a shovel for digging a hole, or you know, smacking some goober in the head. It's a tool. It is used. It has a specific purpose, and that's what we're, you know, that's what we do a lot of. Now, I'll be in the interest of disclosure, I do spend a lot of time on the internet, but one of the reasons I'm doing that is primarily for show prep, or I'm here with you and we're doing what we do with the American Brand Radio Initiative. But a lot of people, you know, these guys that I'm, like I said, these cats that I see on Facebook or social media, whatever it is that they may be doing during the day at work, when they should 9 times out of 10 be paying attention to, oh, I don't know, say the kids that are at their table that you're supposed to be working with, just tossing that out there. And it's not just like, and it's throughout the school. And if it's throughout my school, it's throughout every school. And it's everywhere. It's not, and the kids are the same way. I watch them run into each other and run into stuff all the time. I can't count the times I've had to dodge and duck and move because somebody's staring at an iPad or a notebook or something because they're not paying attention. They're lost in their own little virtual world, and instead of actual reality, they're embracing this virtual reality that takes them all over the place, but they don't have enough sense to move out of the way of a phone pole.
Sorry. just the idea of like somebody with their head in their phone and walking in the side of a car. It's like, hey, good job. Nice going. You know?
Exactly.
Hey, you know, it's funny because like here's the thing. I just flip this the other way. Like if you're crossing the street and you see a car coming, even when I'm in a crosswalk, right? The thing I always do is look at that car and look at that driver in the eyes to engage them because, you know, when you do that, I guarantee they'll stop because if they're not going to stop, you're going to read it in their eyes. You're going to get the hell out of the way, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. But when you get your nose buried 2 feet into your smartphone, I hate to say it, but when you get hit, I tend to laugh. You know, I think that's kind of dark, but I do tend to laugh. I'm like, wow, that was impressive. You went to school for that? Whoa, nice going there, Charlie. Man.
And every day, guys like me and you, men and women our age, because like I said, we're in fundamentally that same demographic. How many times, Scott, how many times did you hear from your mom and dad, from teachers, from the damn crossing guard? Which ways are you supposed to look when you cross the street?
I think you look left and right.
Yeah. You look both ways, right? Because you got two lanes of traffic. You look both ways before crossing the street. You know that. I know that. And the reason that we know that, and most people who aren't, you know, damaged by the digital toxicity of this stuff that they think we can't do without, you know, we know that. To this day, I promise you, I look both ways when I'm crossing the street.
I'll give you another one. What about these backup cameras, right? These reverse backup cameras. Have you seen these in the new cars with like the full screen on your dash?
Well, I've got one in my rear view mirror, a little heads up thing. I kind of like it, but I still look back and use the mirrors.
Yeah, but the thing is, I've had it in my last car, and you literally don't have to look other than just look at that screen, right? But
right.
How did you used to check? And what's the danger of that, too? Because you're not really checking your left and your right.
No.
So, you know, and it's just, on one hand, they do open up ranges of visibility, which is important. But on the other hand, I mean, it's a left and a right that you're used to doing that we learned to back up just with our rear view mirror.
Exactly. And it can make you lazy. And it's just like you said, you're not fully engaged. What you're doing is you're looking at that console and you're counting on the fact that you're going to be able to stop in time if you see a little kid or a dog or somebody in a wheelchair or something come into your field of view on that little view screen. And you're not using your mirrors. And like I said, I have it, and I'll be honest with you, I like it, but I know better than to become completely reliant upon it because it's too small a field of view.
Well, I just think that the technology is a crutch that we fall into. You know, I went out with a buddy of mine the other day who was doing is a planner. Seed drill is what they call it. I'm not a farmer. You know, I'm learning about farming not to become a farmer, but because I want to tell the stories of farming. And it takes some effort, you know, because there's a lot to farming. I don't think people realize how difficult farming is as an industry, as an occupation. Example is just the maintenance of equipment, the maintaining of it. And it's not like they do a whole day. A farmer does a whole day of, say, planting his field, and he's using what's called a seed drill. And then, you know, here it is at, you know, dark, 8 o'clock at night, it's cooling down, and he's got to get in there, and he's still got to clean that whole thing out. And there might be 20 ports on that damn thing that have to be manually cleaned, and the whole thing has to be scrubbed. It's another hour of work. This is a simple example. But my point is that the digital world presents itself as everything we get used to is digitally precise, and we're always used to that. You know, Apple sells its phones with the tolerances of microns, how perfect their machining is, which it always cracks me up, because what do we always do with the Apple iPhone? We put it in a case. Like, I don't know how perfect machine this thing is. I'm sitting here talking to my phone. I got a screen protector, and I have a
an OtterBox on the damn thing. I don't even know what the phone looks like. And so once in a while when I pop it out, and I'm like, whoa, it's kind of a nice looking piece of phone. You know, but the most of the time it's in my hand in an OtterBox because the other side of it is like what happened to me a little while ago. The phone drops, the whole screen shatters, and then you're like, oh, that's good. I've got insurance. And you call up the cell phone insurance company, and they're like, yeah, we got you covered. I'm like, okay, how much? Well, what is it? Oh, it's an iPhone 7. Yes. Oh, that'll cost you $200.
Ouch.
Like, well, thank you. No, thank you. I'm glad I've got that insurance policy with you. But, you know, my point is that so we protect it because we know it's expensive, and we protect it in a case, and we don't appreciate the OtterBox isn't built to micron tolerances. The Apple is. It really doesn't matter how Apple is built. It's just this cell thing that they're trying to do. And the reason I'm saying this is all of this manufacturing is done, you know, with robotics and these ultra-precision machines and the assemblies. There's still hand assembly, but even that's starting to go away. But then you go out and you look at the farmer who produces the food, and you're looking at, and by the way, we don't eat cell phones in case people get confused. And then he's planting the seed, and you're on a seed drill, and they've got this manual mechanical lever to adjust how much seed flow per acre, right?
Right.
And this is the old way. It's like, well, you know, now you, like a digital person would go like, okay, we need exactly 3 seeds per, you know, every inch we go forward is an example, right? The old way is like, yeah, it'll be between 5 and 10, you know. Okay. You see what I'm saying? And there was
right.
There's a certain sense in that imperfection. It's the you on one hand, you want to get things down for precision to minimize waste, but on the other hand, as the example with, you know, the 3, like if you did 3 seeds per, you might have 3 that aren't going to germinate. You might actually need 5. And I'm extrapolating an example out of this, but we become, and it's when you engage a machine like this, we become so conditioned, you expect it to say like, okay, so what's the exact setting for this? It's the nuance of understanding the machine. That's what the exact setting is. And that sort of cultured experience of how to be something we're getting away from in the digital world because everything is digitally perfect, digitally precise, which is also equally artificial, right? That's a whole essence.
Yeah, a friend of mine. Go ahead, man. I'll finish my thought in a minute. Go ahead and finish.
No. I mean, it's kind of an esoteric jump into some of this, and I'm not trying to get off on a trail or, you know, get down a rabbit trail, but my point is that it's just like when you go out and you build a house. You know, you can build a house so every single thing is perfect, and then the only way you're going to accomplish that is if you use ultimately artificial materials. But if you're going to make a house that has things like concrete countertops, and you're going to put natural slate on the floor, and you're going to put, on a bathroom floor, you're going to use cobblestone, a tumbled marble in a bathroom. Yes, I've done all these things. The point is, you want to create. You're using materials that are themselves imperfect to create a beauty that has a balance between the craft and the art, right?
That's a tricky line. Yeah,
it is a tricky line. But we've become accustomed to the world where everything is machined, humanless, soulless, and ultimately the Apple iPhone is soulless. As an example, it's just another appliance. It looks like, you know, you put it an Apple to a Galaxy to whatever. You're like, oh, yeah, I can kind of tell the brand, but with an untrained eye, it's hard to even tell them apart. There's nothing unique about it. Even the
it's just a flat, oblong piece of plastic.
Yeah. So
I had a friend of mine in the music business. He was a sideman for a cat named Charlie McCoy, who was an outstanding harmonica player. And back in the old-timey days, when they still had hand cranks on the sides of TVs, there was a show called Hee Haw, country music show. Charlie was the music director for that. But me and my friend David got into a conversation one time, and what you're talking about, here's how it would go. Here's what technology has done to the music business. Once upon a time, artists would go into the studio. They would go into a recording studio in order to capture a performance. In other words, Elvis might sing, he might sing Too Much Monkey Business 10 times, 12 times. They might be in the studio for hours going over this one song until the producer and the artist go, hey, that's it right there. Take 13. That's the one. This is it. This is the one we'll work with. Nowadays, performances aren't captured. They're created. You got a digital drummer, he is never, ever, ever, ever going to be off beat. Never. And you can take, and you know, you can take a keyboard nowadays. I mean, I'm talking about a musician's keyboard, not a computer keyboard. But all that stuff is so, you know, it's all inbred and intertwined now. And you don't have to go through those 13 takes to get to capture that performance. You can create that performance. And that, to me, gives it less of a feeling of spontaneity, and more of a feeling of manufacture.
Well, no, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm actually I love what the art of analog produced. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And what I don't know if you are familiar, but it's a great, there's a great video, a great documentary, and it's on the Foo Fighters, if you're familiar with the band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did a recording. What came with the Foo Fighters is they had come to a point where they felt that artistically they weren't moving forward because of the digital world. So the lead singer of the Foo Fighters acquired all the old analog equipment, and probably new, but had to bring in some old engineers because it's not done anymore. And they did an analog recording of their album. And I can't remember which album it was. But my point is, and I'm looking it up here, but I'm not going to find it by the time I'm done talking. So, what came out in this interview, in this documentary, was out of all of the artists were saying, it's like, wow, I can't just make a mistake and then go back in and pick up on that riff and go, and we'll splice it in digitally and sound blend it. And when they had to literally learn how to play again, because when they sat down to play, when you went live to record, you don't get that opportunity going, okay, guess what, you missed that note, we need to go back and I need you to hit those two notes and then we'll digitally insert them. That doesn't happen on analog. Analog, when you're getting analog and that type of recording in the old style, you're seeing real performance and real studio performance. So,
yeah, it's art. It's not manufacturing. It's artistry.
Well, and I would argue it's even a little bit more. It's craft. I do distinguish between art and craft.
Sure.
I mean, art, I think, is inception of the. Of the creative, and I think the craft is the skill, the professionalism of skill, of being able to literally, you know, you take the guitarist, the pianist, the drummer, you know, art is being able to express themselves. That's cool. But the craft is being able to sit down and here's a sheet of music and look at that, understand how to play, be able to repeat that over and over, and add the artistic expression in there that takes it to that new level. That's almost the aesthetic of it. Man, we are saying
that. I know, and the technicians, okay, the producer and the audio technicians being able to get that, to capture that.
Exactly, and the sound captured, the ability to have the audio engineers in there to do it right. You know, and it's not like everything, like, you know, so much this day and age, you know, when you film, like when I'm a photographer, I refer to myself as a full-frame photographer. Okay, and there's a reason I say that. When I play around on my iPhone, it's different. But when I'm serious about doing photography, no matter what I'm shooting with, whether it's my iPhone, my Canon, or my, you know, whatever I'm shooting with, I don't shoot to crop, and I don't shoot to post edit. I shoot to capture and everything in that scene needs to fit. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But it's the process that everything in the scene, from frame to frame, you fit, okay? And I say that because
And this is one of the reasons I've always enjoyed documentary work, is because when you do raw documentary, you don't get to retake. What you capture, what you miss. And when you add full frame in there, that doesn't mean like you're going to go, okay, well, I like that shot, but I'll plan on when I get to the post-production piece, the part when we start putting the film together. We'll edit this, we'll color this, we'll do a rotoscope on this. That's not the way it should ever work. I mean, it happens all the time, but to really get into the meat of the craft is to be able to shoot. That the only thing you're going to do when you're done with that is to add color, to enhance the colors more to what the eye actually would see, right?
And you know, it's funny that you would say that, because when I take pictures, and I'm an amateur, I'm a point and shoot guy, and I've got a cheap little point and shoot camera. But when I take pictures, for example, if I go to, well, when I have visited places in the past, like USS Alabama or the Naval Air Museum at Pensacola, that's when I'm taking a picture, I want to get as much of it in its proper perspective in that frame as I can. And you're right. I worry about the details. Maybe I take it and I take that picture and I'm like you, I'm not shooting to crop. I'm not shooting to do those things. I can fix it, you know, brighten it or tune the colors or whatever, through my software. But when I shoot a picture, when I take a picture of anything, that's usually what I'm doing. I'm trying to get as much in that picture as I can, but everything within its perspective. So I kind of understand that.
Well, what I'm saying is, it's when you really look at there's a lot of people I know that will shoot, and they're shooting for a detail in the shot. They know that they're, as an example, as they're shooting stills, and I'm just going to use some technical terms here, but it's important. You know, like, they'll have a 22 megapixel sensor. They know that they can blow this up, you know, 500 times, and it still has
right.
the same resolution. And then you can crop it down. It's like, there's another term I would use in my shooting, which I would refer to myself as a proximity shooter, meaning that I hate telephoto lenses. I don't use them. I'd like to get close or away from the shot myself, because it involves you in the scene. So the
right.
reason I bring this up, that the technology is all there. Like with the Apple iPhone, it's pretty amazing what you can do with digital manipulation of the image, which is what's actually happening here. On a lot of what they do. And it's quite impressive what the digital manipulation will do. And I'm not taking away from that. But the craft of the art of expression you can do all day long on an iPhone. But the craft of shooting, of filming, takes a certain commitment and a professional precision that you learn. You don't just have digital do it for you, you know? And this
right.
is where I'm all about enhanced tools to make, you know, do better storytelling as an example, or, you know, improve processes. But ultimately, it goes back to human in the loop and what value do we have in all of this. And when we get into the world of tech, humans have no value. It's just like you're a convenience or an inconvenience in tech. I mean, your convenience is you use it so they can make money. Your inconvenience is, yeah, you're imperfect and tech can do it more efficiently and get it out of the way. So the inconvenience, your labor is too high, we can do it with a machine cheaper, get out of the way. The convenience of it is, you're a user, that means we can sell more advertising. Thank you very much. I mean, that's fundamentally tech, right? And
yeah, to buy our accessories.
Right, and it's the attitude that creates in our culture. We have got to get back to the value, and you've heard me talk about this, the value of the farm. And as opposed to the value of the tech engineer. The tech engineer, we go back full circle where we started. I mean, they've got Tourette's, man. I swear they sit down there and they're like, what am I going to do today? Okay, you know, let's create another update. And so, boom, you get an update. You're like, why did I get an update? What the hell is going on? I went over to use my DJI drone the other day, and it's crazy. I was going to use it at the church event last Sunday. It tested it, all was fine. I get out there, boom, I have it all ready. I've taken the time to set it all up. I've got a clear zone to fly. I've got the GPS set up on it. I'm flying it off my phone. Okay, ready to fly. It says it's not hooked up. I'm like, that's weird. I just went, so I go through the process again. You know, set it bottom up. And yet when I hit fly, it flies. But the camera's not working. Why would that be? Well, because overnight, somebody decided that it was important to get a GPS update.
Oh, jeez.
You don't make this shit up. I mean, like, Oh, that was good. I tested it yesterday, last night. You decided apparently it was important to get a GPS update, and now you shut off the entire camera feature until I can. Oh, but by the way, I can't do that in where I'm at because my download speeds are so atrocious that I'd probably still be over there trying to do the download, right?
Right.
So there's really the sense of who we are is rooted in the value of what we produce. And the problem with tech is it produces it's an interesting statement because here we are using tech to communicate, which has substantial value. But in the pieces of your daily grind of all these minutia updates and nonsensical software additions, which we really don't need, the nuts and bolts of all this tech industry is really a non-valued additive to life. And worse yet, what you create is going to be evaporated within a week, 2 weeks, or 6 months because someone's going to do an update. So it has no lasting value. Every single thing I've built, every bit of photography I've done still lasts. That's powerful. But when you're in a place where, yeah, man, I did this software piece on the iOS operating system. I did it about 5 years ago. And it's like, good. And then it's like, what is it? I don't know. It's all gone now. You know, it's a distant memory. How long did it last? It was really great for 6 months. Like, oh, my goodness. You know where I'm going?
Yeah, and then came version 2.2.
And a new set of engineers. And a new set of engineers.
Exactly. Hey, good news. Yeah. And we have, I know it's Halloween and we don't need to be afraid. There are a lot of things to be encouraged by. Judge Roy Moore has a 17-point lead over the McConnell Soros guy. Well, yeah, I was gonna say that's your neighbors right down there in Alabama, and he's rolling. He's rolling like a big dog. ESPN they haven't said anything yet, but there are people at ESPN who are looking very seriously as this decline continues. And I was correct. Sunday and Monday both, the ratings have dropped yet again in week 8 of the NFL. ESPN is considering dropping Monday Night Football. Now think about that. Monday Night Football has been around almost as long as you and I have.
I know.
In some form or another. I mean, ABC ruled the roost with it for 1,000 years, and throughout the mid-80s into the mid-90s, I never missed a Monday night game. I might not finish a Monday night game because in those days, they went to 12:30 and after, but I never missed one. And ESPN is losing, and in the month of October, somebody wants to do the math on this, get a calculator out there, 15,000 times 31, because that was what ESPN hemorrhaged in subscriptions for the month of October, 15,000 a day.
Oh, that's so rewarding.
That's power, baby. That's us. That's America. That is, we've talked about this. And by the way, I got a chance, and you were absolutely right when you were talking in the split screen show yesterday that I was only there for auditorially. But I listened. I had read all three of those clips from Peter, whose last name is impronounceable but starts with a C, from Breitbart, the Hollywood travelogue. And you were absolutely right. It was considerably more compelling to listen to the third part of that as it was to read it. And, folks, it's on Breitbart. Go check it out under the heading Big Hollywood. It's a 3-part essay. It'll take a little time, but it's worth it for you. Go there and check that out. But part 3, and I loved – the thing that got me the most on that was I loved how the anonymous types, the Anons, went in there and totally ate Shia LaBeouf's lunch. I just loved that. I loved that.
Well, it's so encouraging too. So yeah, and this is the thing. It's I'm really big in the multimedia sense. I mean, I know it's kind of interesting is where we are. In spite of the digital world, and unless you do a film, really what's interesting is the credibility is still given to the written word. Now, that's good and bad, okay? I mean, I think it's powerful in what it speaks to, the kind of the fundamentals that are of value that are still there in terms of knowledge, because the written word is a very powerful thing, right? But I also, when you take a look at the way that is the abilities of multimedia, and you mentioned the podcast, or we have the video casts, you know, well done. Like that podcast of Breitbart far exceeds that written article. It's everything in that written article, and it's so much more because you get the real audio. I'm huge on, more than even video, I'm big on audio. I think the good audio stories, like the old radio programs, which is basically what Breitbart did through a podcast, are so powerful and so compelling because our minds work at different levels. They get us thinking. They get us imagining. They get us going to places that isn't – the images tell us what we're supposed to see. The images translate what the story is supposed to look like. And that's very detrimental to the cognitive capacity and in really enhancing the critical thinking abilities and the creative aspect of all of us, which ultimately leads to innovation, right? But when we talk about like radio programs, podcasts, even just video narrative where people are just hearing conversation, like one thing about the narrative we do, these can all be podcasts, right? When you get into that, I mean, that's a stimulating issue for the mind to think, to imagine, to see things, to go places, you know. That's what I loved about the Breitbart story on podcast. I just think it's one of the best new podcasts out there, and people should listen to it. It's called Tinseltown. It's on Breitbart. You can go to Breitbart News Channel, and you can go to Hollywood, go to the Hollywood tab above, and it's all there. Three parts of Tinseltown. Great story. Amazing insight into Tinseltown with some great humor, some really dark subjects that they handled extremely well. And most of all, the last piece, the third episode, I literally, listening to how Shia LaBeouf was being hammered, I'm not exaggerating. I followed that story, and the way it was told and listening to the real audio, I literally about fell off my chair laughing. It was so damn funny.
It was awesome.
And so encouraging because these are young Anon kids. I mean, some of these aren't even voting age, and they're like, what? President Trump leaves a billionaire position. He goes to be a president for the country, and all you people want to do is smash his family and denigrate him? Hell no, not on my watch. And they set up their intelligence teams, and I mean, it's amazing level of organization. It's fantastic.
And he's running all over the place, and there's no place safe for him. And guys, this is – oh, and I guess you heard about the latest creeper, Kevin Spacey.
Oh, don't get me started on that pedophile.
Okay, yeah, and you know what? That's the thing. What he did doesn't make him gay. What he did makes him a pedophile creeper.
Well, okay, but here's the problem. It is – how is it even possible to claim being gay as a pedophile? I mean, I just want to be clear about this. I mean, the fact that he even thought he could do it is so disgusting. Notice he didn't say he was a pedophile. Well, I'm gay.
No.
I mean, would you say,
no?
You know, like, no, you're a pedophile, you scumbag maggot. You know, and
he's been one for years. And it doesn't – and see, here's the thing. They've shut down the production on the final season. I think that's done for whatever that show is that he does. Netflix,
yeah.
I think, or Hulu, whoever it is. That's over. And here's what – and what we're watching, and we've been watching it for weeks with the advent of this whole Harvey Weinstein creeper thing. There is an implosion going on. There is a cultural implosion on the left happening, and it's happening for one reason and one reason only, and that is because Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Public are sitting at home and are going, you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm sick of these guys. I'm sick of these people in Hollywood you know, a bucket of puke where everything is okay, and it doesn't matter how weird, how freaky, how disgusting it is, it's all cool because we're all walking, you know, in that hard left narrative, and so nobody's going to say anything to us as long as we're corrupting the culture for these people, for their masters on the left, and the American people are saying no. Just like the American people said, you know what, no, we're not going to have Hillary Clinton as president of the United States. I don't want to see her wide behind anywhere near the White House ever again. I'm tired of watching these clowns on the, you know what, I'm not going to watch the NFL. Honey, we're not watching the NFL anymore. Well, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't care, but I'm sick of these guys, and we're not going to watch them anymore. And no, we're not going out to the movies. Tonight, we're watching The Sands of Iwo Jima. Taking it away. It is a one-legged stool, just like John Nolte said at Breitbart, another guy that does some writing on big Hollywood and the cable stuff. It is a one-legged stool that these people sit on. We are that leg. And I don't want these guys on my shoulders anymore. I'm tired of carrying them. And the American public is tired of carrying them. And what we're watching, we live in head days, what we're seeing here. Don't let these people fool you. Less than 1 million people a day watch CNN, but they're going to tell you and they're going to tell everybody else with their packaging and their branding and their bugs and their memes and all their crap that they are the hottest thing going. 63 million people almost. It's almost 63 million people voted for Donald Trump. Less than 1 million people a day watch CNN. People have no power. They're the guy. It's like the Land of Oz. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Well, pay attention to him because he's a clown, and he's an inept one at that. It's just a trick. It's just smoke. It's just mirrors. Not like the real deal that you guys get here every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m., not to mention throughout the week when the Talk America Radio Network gets back up. This is what you need to be listening to. Don't worry about Bill O'Reilly. Don't worry about Sean Hannity. Don't worry about any of those cats. Don't worry about Chris Matthews. Don't worry about Rachel Maddow or whatever his name is. Forget them. Pull that leg away and watch these people in Hollywood fall flat on their behinds and laugh at them. Laugh at those Hollywood creepers. Can almost taste my own puke. God. Sorry. We're trying to be a family show, and I used to not cuss till I started hanging around with you. You know that? And here you are trying to clean up your act, and I'm backsliding.
You know, but you know what? In fairness, man, you know, it is so hard not to just literally lose control of the respectful language we have. We are dealing with the absolute scum of the earth that think that violating children and forcing people into sex to pay to, or, you know, sex to play is normal. I mean, it's such disgust. And this is literally the bowels of the earth. And it's really hard. So I think people are understanding. We keep it clean. We try to do the best we can, but it is so emotional. When you start talking about violating innocence, children, our future, man, you know what's crazy? You know what's crazy? I met a guy that was in the Crips. He was a head enforcer for the Crips. Okay, dude had done some seriously bad stuff. He was a mean son of a gun. He and I got along great, just so I say it. Very nice person, but in his job, he does some bad stuff, right? And you know what he says to me? We have some basic rules. You never violate children or harm children. You never violate innocence, and you never violate or harm elderly. Now think about that. And these lefties are worse than what we consider to be a major gang in the country. Now what does that say, right? Oh my goodness gracious. Yeah, you can get me going, James. We got to jump on. You know what? We got about 5 minutes, so let's turn this thing into a positive, because I don't like leaving the show on that. I feel like I've got to go rinse my mouth out with kerosene, and I don't have any. So let's jump to something more positive.
Okay, well, on a positive note, like I've said, Roy Moore is killing it in Alabama, And that's something to be encouraged by. And also there was some other, it was, I can't remember exactly who it was, but there was some other establishment Republican that is not seeking reelection. And I can't for the life of me remember who on earth it was. I'll pull up Breitbart here real quick, hopefully, because I think that's where I saw it. All these establishment guys are bailing, and we've talked about the many and myriad reasons as to why they are. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, okay, great, whatever. Thank God and Greyhounds, you're out of there, pal. And the Podestas, what's this guy's name? Oh, and I guess, well, you saw the terrorist attack in New York this morning, I'm sure. These guys are they're running scared. The donors are running scared. McConnell is losing money like you cannot believe. He's literally hemorrhaging donors. And these guys, you know who they're talking to? They're talking to Steve Bannon.
Yep.
I think there was one guy, there was one establishment-type Republican that he wasn't going to, that he was, Ted Cruz. And I'm still kind of fuzzed on that one. I don't know what the deal is on that, but he's not going to, he's leaving Ted Cruz alone for Representative Hensarling. That's the guy's name, Jeb Hensarling. Hensarling, and he's a Republican, and he's from Texas. He's not going to be running for reelection. He's not an old guy. He doesn't look to be sick guy.
Let me
but he's
James. We got about 4 minutes.
Right ahead.
So let me take two. You take the last two. Here's the
all
deal.
Right.
People in power don't give up power willingly. That's important to remember, because these folks aren't stepping down because they have some new noble enlightenment that's come, it has struck them to become great statesmen. They're bailing the ship because the swamp is getting drained. And even though right now there's an enormous amount of media flurry around the Mueller investigation, the fact of the matter is the swamp is getting drained. And people are bailing. And it's an opportunity for us to get onto the local action like we advocate all the time, get engaged, and make sure that we replace these established elites with people that will carry our values to Washington, D.C. and uphold what we believe in as Americans. And that's really our message every single day. Faith and knowledge. Faith and knowledge and local action. And that's the three pillars of success. Faith, knowledge, local action. And when you put those two together, you're an unstoppable force. And that's what we're trying to do every day. James, go.
Guys, we're winning. You're not going to hear that we're winning on CNN. You're not here on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC. Hell, you're not going to hear it all together that much on Fox, like I said. But you'll hear it here because we're paying attention to the winners. And you know what, America? We're the winners. Why? Well, obviously, because we're winning. Hollywood is eating itself. Every day, there's new accusations. And you know what? There's going to be new accusations. They're not new to the people in Hollywood, because every time one of these guys comes out and gets busted, somebody shrugs their shoulders and goes, yeah, I knew about that. Everybody knew about that. It's happening before our very eyes. We're watching them wilt away. It's like somebody threw a bucket of water on the Wicked Witch. It's like somebody pulled back the drapes in Dracula's coffin room. We're watching them decay. But we can't just be content with that. We've got to help it along. We've got to force it. And that's exactly what we're going to do. No quarter on the ideological forums. In the battlefield of the mind, it is the black flag. We take no prisoners. We take no surrender. No quarter. No respite. No rest. We get on them, and we don't ever let up. The American Brand Radio Initiative can be heard here on our friend Mark Hoffman's Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The archive productions will be placed on Blog Talk, the American Brand Radio Initiative channel. We have our own channel. We're getting that up and running. You'll find some excellent programming there, and you're going to find more original American Brand stuff as we continue. Scott, can't thank you enough. Look forward to every show that we do and all our conversations. Thank you so much for being here with me, my friend. None of this gets done without you. We're grateful. And I guess we'll be seeing you guys next week when we take a look at things as we do here on the American Brand Radio Initiative.
Now, we got Thursday, James. Don't forget about that.
Tuesdays and Thursdays, absolutely. Yeah, Tuesdays and Thursdays, live, 7 p.m. Eastern. You don't want to miss it. Patriot Nation Radio Network, the American Brand Radio Initiative. Ladies and gentlemen, accept no substitutes. And with that, we're going to say good night, God bless, and we'll see you on Thursday.